Hi, my name is Brett Statham, and this is the Microsoft Genius Station introduction for the 2016 NASA Space Apps Challenge. At Microsoft, we think we've got a ton of resources to help you create some really awesome hacks for the Space Apps Challenge. So how can we help? Well, do you need to run servers in the cloud? We've got virtual machines. Do you need to work with devices and sensors? We've got IoT solutions. Do you need to store and process data? We've got cloud databases. Do you need to do predictive analytics? We've got machine learning. Do you need to host a website? We got web apps. Or do you need to process images and speech? We got Project Oxford. So we're gonna talk about each one of these briefly, but let's first jump in and take a look at Azure Virtual Machines. What's going on?
Mayday, mayday. This is biologist Daniel Egan. I've been stranded on Mars. I need help.
Wow, Daniel, that's amazing. This is Brett. I'm here in California on planet Earth. I actually heard about you in the news. You got left behind by your crew? How are you contacting me?
Well, I actually got some satellite pieces and pieced them together. I was able to get audio and video out of it, but I actually pointed this thing at Houston. I'm not sure how I got you.
Bad aim, I guess. I'm actually in the middle of a presentation right now talking to developers about creating space apps. How can I help you?
Well, you know, I'm going to be here for a while, and I'm going to need water, I'm going to need food, and I really need computing power to be able to calculate how I can get all this stuff. Do you think you can help?
Actually, yeah, I was just about to start talking about virtual machines. And in Azure, we've got both Windows and Linux virtual machines. And there's images that just have the bare bones OS, or we have images that have product pre-installed. So I think we can get you all the computing resources that you need. Let me switch over to my screen, and I'll show you how.
To create a virtual machine, I'll open the Azure portal, click on New, from Virtual Machines, in the list of templates, I'll pick Ubuntu, and then simply hit Create. And I'll start with some basic settings like the virtual machine's name, administrative username and password, as well as the name of a resource group that I'll use to organize all of my resources together into a single unit. And then I'll verify the West US data region and hit OK. For the size, I'm going to pick A1, but you can review other sizes and their performance and cost. And then I'm simply going to review the other settings and accept their defaults. Then I'll review the summary and hit OK to create the VM. That'll take a few minutes to actually spin the virtual machine up, but when it's up to SSH into my Linux VM, I need its IP address. So I'll click on the IP address so that I can copy it into my clipboard. And then I'll open the SSH client to my choice. In this case, I'm going to use PuTTY. And then simply paste in that IP address, connect over SSH, accept the certificate, and then log in with those administrative credentials I set up when I provisioned the virtual machine. And at this point, I'm at a terminal window on that virtual machine. I can configure anything I want and install anything else I need. Now, for a Windows VM, I can just repeat the process. Under New and Virtual Machines, I'll pick the Windows Server template and click Create. And for the basic settings, I'll enter the Windows server name, administrative username and password, and I'm going to reuse the same resource group I created for my Ubuntu VM and use the West US data center. For the size, I'll choose A1, and then just review the settings but accept the defaults, and then click OK to create my virtual machine. And again, it'll take a few minutes to create this, but once it's done, I can click on the Connect button to download an RDP file, and then connect, log in with the credentials that I used when I created the virtual machine. And at this point, I can configure this Windows server any way I like.
Brett, those virtual machines look perfect. Now what I need is possibly some IoT help. So I have some crops, and I was able to get a Raspberry Pi and some sensors. Some soil sensors, and I really need a place to move all the data so I can look at it and monitor my crops. Can you help me out there?
Yeah, but it looks like maybe you're not alone?
Oh yeah, some of the locals have taken a liking to me, so.
Well, I hope he's friendly, but let me talk about some of the IoT solutions you can use up in Azure. So, in your case, you've got a Raspberry Pi, but there might be other devices, Intel Edisons or particle photons or whatever. And we can take sensors connected to those devices and send messages up into an Azure IoT hub. And once that data is up in Azure, I can use something like Stream Analytics to either move the data off to something like Power BI for reporting, or I can use Stream Analytics to do aggregations or even alerting on top of that data. So let's go back to my screen and I'll show you how it works.
This is a walkthrough of the Node.js connected weather station demo from thinglabs.io. You can see in my camera I've got an Arduino Uno with a SparkFun weather shield plugged into my computer over USB. Now, off in Azure, you can create Internet of Things services from New, Internet of Things, and you can see them listed there, but I've already got some created. I've got an Azure IoT hub over here, just called Space Apps Hub using the free pricing tier. And I've created a stream analytics job that can get data in from that Space Apps Hub, and it's going to push it off into a Power BI data set for me. And the way it does it is with this query, and the query you can see gets from the IoT hub, it pushes it off into the Space Apps dataset in Power BI, and it generates these min and max and average aggregates for my Fahrenheit, Celsius, and relative humidity values. And it does those every 5 seconds. Now, in my computer's Node.js application here, I have a IoT hub connection up to my Space Apps hub. It then reads over that USB cable from that SparkFun weather shield and generates a JSON payload that it can then send up into my Azure IoT hub for me. So let's jump over to my PowerShell command prompt and get that running. Great. So it's connected to the Arduino with WeatherShield on COM6. It's connecting up to the IoT hub and now sending messages. So at this point, I should have them coming through Stream Analytics up into Power BI. And there's the data set. So I can see all of those aggregates, the averages. Let me grab my average Fahrenheit and humidity, and then we'll break those down by their time. And then I can actually save that as a report. I'll just call it my Mars weather report. And then I can take this visual and pin it to a dashboard called the Mars weather dashboard. And then if I open that dashboard, you can actually see those sensor values, and they're live. So I'm going to pin this window off to the side and grab my camera. And then I've just gone to the freezer and grabbed a cold slushy bag, and I'll drop that on top of my weather shield, and we can watch these sensor values start to change. And there they go. Pretty awesome.
Hey, Brett, those IoT solutions are really cool. And I actually want to introduce you to my friend Sam. And oddly enough, he speaks English.
Hey, Brett. Yeah, we get all the radio and TV shows up here. That's why I can speak all the languages.
Cool. So anyway, now that we have all that data, we actually need somewhere to store it. Do you have somewhere place we can store this data?
You bet. Let me tell you about some of the database options we have up in Azure. First, we've got some sort of database as a service options. So if you need a good old relational database like SQL Server, we have Azure SQL Database. And once you spin that up, which only takes a couple of minutes, you can connect to it with all the sort of standard clients and tools that you're used to working with around SQL Server. On the other hand, if you need a NoSQL solution, we have a DocumentDB offering that gives you NoSQL as a service. No installations, you spin it up in minutes, and it's now a JSON-based document database ready for you to use. And of course, if you need more control than that, like where you need a specific version on a specific OS, you want MongoDB on Ubuntu, you can always just go spin up a VM and install the database engine of your choice. So let's switch back to my screen and I'll show you how to spin up some databases in Azure.
You can create an Azure SQL database in the portal under Data and Storage SQL Database and give the database a name. You also need to place it on a server, so I'll create a new server, give it some administrative credentials, and put it off in the West US region. Now, for the database, you could use a blank database, but I'm going to choose to set up the sample AdventureWorks data, and I'm going to change my pricing tier to the cheapest tier, which is $5 a month for a 2-gig database. Then I'll set the resource group to that same Space Apps group that all my other resources are in and create the database. Now, once that's created, I can drill into the server and set up a firewall rule to allow my client IP address to connect. Then I can grab that server name and use standard SQL tools like SQL Server Management Studio or client APIs to connect up to the server with those credentials and be able to get in and just query that data like a normal SQL database. Now for an Azure Document DB, I can go back to the portal and under New, Data and Storage, choose Azure Document DB, and create an Azure Document DB account. I'll give it a name, put it in the same resource group and region as our other resources, and create it. And once that's created, I can drill in and create a database. I'll just give the database a name, and then inside that database, I'm going to create a collection. And the collection is where we actually pay to store data, so I'll choose the cheapest pricing tier at S1. Now, I could connect through client APIs, but I actually get a document management tool right here in the portal, so I'll go upload some JSON documents that just have some sample weather data in them. And I can see them here. I can actually browse the documents and see the JSON data. I can also query it here in the portal, and I get a SQL-like syntax that I can use to query all the documents back, and here they all are, but I could also use a where clause and just pull the documents where the Fahrenheit value is between 50 and 60. So I'll run that, and I see that sure enough, I just got two documents back, and their Fahrenheit value is in fact between 50 and 60. And lastly, we talked about putting a database engine directly in a VM. So for example, we have the VM that we created previously. I could just SSH into that and then use something like apt-get install to go off and install the database engine of my choice. We also have, however, up in GitHub, some Azure Quick Start templates that can help you create the same thing. For example, here's one for setting up MongoDB on an Ubuntu VM. I can just click this Deploy to Azure button, follow the prompts, and set up my virtual machine.
So I was actually playing around with the mean stack before I left Earth, so the MongoDB in a VM looks really cool. Although the document DB stuff looks really, really easy, but I'm really actually concerned with my crops and my food. Sam's been offering me some of his food. I don't think it'll agree with me. So I was wondering if from all that data that I'm putting up in the cloud, if there's some learnings I can get from it, and if you have something that'll help me with that.
Actually, I think Azure Machine Learning is probably exactly what you're looking for. With machine learning, you can take a data set of known inputs and results and then train a data model to be able to make predictions on those results. And then in the future, you can take in new input values, feed it into your machine learning model, and actually get, hopefully, an accurate prediction back. So let's jump back to my screen. I'll show you how to set up an Azure Machine Learning experiment.
To start, I've got Azure ML Studio open in my browser, and I want to create a new blank experiment, and the first thing I need to do is pull in some data. So for this example, I'm going to use some sample census data with known income values. So I can actually right-click on that and visualize the data, and based on all these inputs, figure out whether or not a person does or does not make more or less than 50K. So that's what I want to be able to predict. So I'm going to take that data and split it into two pieces. So I'll find the split data component and drag that onto my workspace. And I'm going to move my source data in to the input as the split data. And then I'm going to tell split data to take 70% of the data and send it out through the first output and 30% through the second. Now I'm going to use a two-class boosted decision tree model here to basically predict the two classes of more or less than 50K. And I need to train that model with my input data. So I'm going to find a train model component, drag it out there, and I'll tell it to train that model with that 70% of my source data from the split data component. And I'm specifically going to tell it to predict the income column for me. So now that I've got that, I can then come in and score it, and it's going to decide whether or not each prediction met or didn't meet the actual known value from the 30% of my sample data. And now I can actually go measure how well it did with the evaluate model component. So I'll drag that out and then send my scores into the evaluate, and I can see how well it does. So let me run this, and when it's done, I can come back in and visualize my score model and see over here that there's a number of incomes and their scored labels. And in some cases, they didn't match. So that means there were some mistakes. And that's what evaluate model is going to tell me, is how well it did at predicting that. So I can see that overall, I had about a 92% accuracy. So that's actually pretty darn good. And now I can publish this as a web service that I can call from client applications.
Well, I can really see how powerful this platform is. But, you know, me being the only one on this planet, I'd love to be able to share this data with other biologists. Is there a way to put this up in a website or something?
Yeah, what you need for that is web apps. With web apps, you can actually create really light, free Azure websites if you need to, or you can scale these up into web applications that span the globe. And when you do that, you can use popular frameworks like Node.js or ASP.NET or Flask on Python and use the programming languages that you use most. So let's, again, jump back to my screen and I'll show you how to spin up an Azure web app.
For this demo, I'm going to create a Node.js Express web application, but it could be an ASP.NET web app or a Python Flask site or even just static HTML. But in this case, I'll use the Express generator to go in and generate an Express website. Then I'm going to switch into the folder. And then really quickly, I'm just going to use Visual Studio Code. Now, you could use any editor, but I'm going to create a .gitignore file to tell Git to ignore the node modules folder so those don't get uploaded into GitHub. Now I can do an npm install and install all the packages that are needed. Then an npm start just to test it locally. Now, by default, Express websites listen on port 3000. So I'll pull open Chrome, and I'll tell it to go to localhost 3000, and there's the site. So now I can jump back to the command prompt, and I'll just go initialize and commit all my Git stuff. And then I can go into GitHub and add that local repository in, and tell it to publish that up into my GitHub account. So now my source code is up in the cloud. Now to the portal, new, web and mobile, web app, and create a new web application in the same resource group as my other resources. I'll create a plan that's also in the West US region and use the free pricing tier. And then I'll just go ahead and create that web application. Once it's created, I can go in and configure a deployment source and tell it to get its source code from GitHub. So I'll hit deployment source, tell it to use GitHub as that source, and if necessary, I'd authenticate to my account. But in my case, I've already done that, and I can just point right at that Space Apps Web repo I just created. And then it'll go ahead and sync up with that, pull that source up into Azure, and now I can browse to the live site and see that it's there. And now any more changes that I make in Git, I can commit, push up to GitHub, and they'll automatically be deployed to Azure.
Brett, thanks for all your help. Azure is really awesome.
Yeah, I really want you to open a data center on Mars. I'd use it right now, but our data compliance regulations don't allow us to use anything off planet.
And actually, speaking of that, Brett, maybe there's one more thing you can help me with. The habitat really doesn't have locks on it, and this guy just walked right in. So maybe you can help me with some facial recognition locks that I can do for the habitat?
Yeah. I'm not sure I'd want him walking into my house either. But for the image detection, I think you should take a look at Project Oxford. Project Oxford actually has APIs to help you do image processing, speech processing, and language processing. So once again, let me jump back to my screen. I'll show you how to do it.
You can learn all about Project Oxford at projectoxford.ai. And from there, there's links off to the documentation, as well as SDKs for a variety of platforms. But for this quick example, I'm just going to use one of the live demos. Now for Daniel's face detection Hablock, the face verification API would be a great fit. Now these might be images coming off of a webcam or off of a phone camera, but in my case, I've grabbed images off the feed from Daniel. So let me open one of those images. And I can see that the face verification API has identified key points on his face. So let's pull a second picture in that we know is also Daniel. And I can see that the face verification API agrees. It says those two faces belong to the same person with a high degree of confidence. So that means if Daniel were to come to the Hablock through the camera, we ought to be able to detect that it's him. Now, I also grabbed some images of Sam off the feed, so let's pull one of those in. And I can see that the API doesn't even detect a face. I mean, Sam's a Martian, so it makes sense, but it certainly doesn't match Daniel's face, so Sam wouldn't be able to get in through the Hablock.
Brett, I really appreciate all the demos, but where can I go for more help? And who can I ask when I have questions? And finally, how can I get some free Azure for me? And some for Sam too.
That's a great question. For more resources, you can go to the Microsoft Genius Station website. That's at http://aka.ms/spaceapps. If you have questions, you can send them to an email alias at spaceapps@microsoft.com and we'll help you out. And if you're going to be attending a Space Apps Challenge event, you can actually ask your local organizer for an Azure Pass that gets you some free Azure resources. Well, I know you got a lot of work to do, so good luck, Daniel. Nice to meet you, Sam, and I'll talk to you guys later. Bye.